much to talk about on this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And for a team that has gone 6-1 over its last seven games with four walk-offs, there's actually a lot of annoying stuff to talk about.
which is super weird.
Yay! Because
we put this on Twitter. The team, since their 3-12 start, they're, what, 24-15 since the 3-12 start, which is only worse than the Dodgers and Cubs in that time in the National League. Like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought after that start?
Yeah.
And yet, there are some bugaboos.
Yeah.
There are some bugaboos to talk about.
There are some things. But overall, mostly good things coming into this week's episode of the old PDP as we welcome you in. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we both have a dog within arm's reach, I believe, of us.
Yes, I'm out on the back patio, so if any of my neighbors were interested in the state of the Colorado Rockies, they're going to get the information right now.
Or at least half of the information, hearing half of the conversation.
Yes, they're going to hear half of the conversation about the Colorado Rockies.
Very weird. So here we are. The Rockies open up a three-game weekend series with the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. I don't even know the last time the Blue Jays were here. Last time the Orioles were here was 2004. Get on.
We can find out together.
Get on that. Yeah. See when the last time the Blue Jays were here was. Because it's been a while, I would imagine. And no Tulo.
I can hold my head up high. What?
Oh, no Tulo. I remember a couple years ago you thought, like, oh, man, what if they get an interleague series and Tulo comes here with the Blue Jays? And
What if they got an interleague series with the Yankees now and Tulo came back? Like, would it be a big deal?
He has to get on a field healthily before that can happen, which he has not. Giancarlo Stanton has not. Aaron Judge has not. That team doesn't make any sense. But we're not here to talk about that.
And they're like the best team in
baseball. Exactly.
Anyway,
it'll make any sense. They're still winning, and they have literally none of their projected
of
starters
us.
At the beginning of the year, except for DJ. No, DJ wasn't even a projected starter there at the beginning of the year.
No, he was going to be a floater.
The utility guy. And now he's like the American League MVP over there. Very annoying.
Super annoying. Yep.
But
2016 they came, apparently.
Oh, really? Oh, I don't even remember that.
They lost 2-3.
Huh.
June of 2016. Late June of 2016.
What was I doing in late June of 2016? I don't know. Not paying attention to that series, apparently.
You know what I remember? Like, they've never won a game in Toronto.
Okay.
They lost all three in 2002. They lost all three in 07. I remember that. I think that was part of that the road trip from hell.
Yeah, the terrible road trip.
Where Fuentes blew every game. Because I remember that was late June 2007. Yeah, they lost all three there.
Yeah.
Then they lost all three in 2013. They're 0-9 all time in Toronto, but at Coors Field, they are 7-2 all time against Toronto at Coors Field.
Wow. Yeah. Huh. That would be an interesting World Series if that ever came to pass.
Yeah. Yeah, late June 2016. Like, let's see, the last game they lost was a 5-3 loss. Who in the world was pitching in those games? Let's find out together. Tyler Anderson lost the last game. The Blue Jays were in town.
Okay. Stunner.
That tells you anything. Aaron Sanchez, who's going to pitch on Sunday, he got the victory in that game. Roberto Osuna picked up the save. That's fun. He's a nice guy.
Those three games against the Blue Jays in 07 actually kicked off that 1-9 road trip. They lost 9-8.
It was the start of the 1-9 road trip.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. 9-8, Brian Fuentes took the loss in that one. 11-6, Aaron Cook took the loss in that one. 5-0, Josh Fogg took the loss. Brian Fuentes would go on to take three more losses on that road trip. Yeah. He did not have a single decision the entire year going into that road trip, and then took four losses on that road trip alone.
And then they put in Manny Corpus as the closer, and the rest is history at that point.
Signed Manny Corpus to a three-year extension, and you like never heard from him again.
Yeah. Also, in that last game, Christian Adames hit second in that game. The last time the Blue Jays were in town.
Interesting.
He went 0-5.
Brian Fuentes going into that road trip had a 1.89 ERA and
we're morons. Tulo wasn't in that series. Tulo played in that series.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah.
We're morons. We're stupid people.
I forgot about that.
But also, the Blue Jays were good that year. They went to the playoffs that year.
Yeah, that was the year after the bat flip.
Yes, that was the year they lost to the Indians in the LCS.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Boy, that team
was the Cleveland Cubs World Series.
Yeah, that was Donaldson, Encarnacion, Tulo. Like, we're like their 3-4-5. You're like,
it was
man,
good team.
Team was really good.
Yeah. Anyway, Toronto Blue Jays come to town. And,
God, I love our production.
They have none of those meetings. Super yeah. old good guys, but they have a bunch of really young good guys now. And that's going to make for an interesting series.
Even though they are a very bad team.
Yeah, they're a really bad team. But
they're very young and terrible.
They've got some really interesting dudes on that roster.
Yes.
And it's going to be a fun series, hopefully, just because of where the Rockies have been over the last week now of just walking off everybody and everything. Four walk-off wins in six wins on this homestand for the Rockies, and the first four-game sweep of Arizona since 2014. Just the second four-game sweep of the D-backs in franchise history for the Rockies, and they come from behind yesterday and walk off with an 11-10 win in the 10th inning. And tonight you get a matchup, Kevin Biggio and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Rowdy Tellez, all these interesting young dudes. Danny Jansen, they all arrive at Coors Field. I think that team is positioned to be good in like 2020.
Like 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. They're like the Padres were last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah,
like they've got some dudes coming.
They're objectively like a very, very bad team right now.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it's, you know.
But they're also very young.
Although the Baltimore Orioles were a very, very bad team.
Yes.
Came into Coors Field and were like an inning away from taking two out of three.
Well, and they are starting, the Blue Jays will be starting their three best guys.
Yeah.
Edwin Jackson tonight, who was playing for his 14th team, which is incredible. And then Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez will be pitching on Saturday, Sunday. So at least that's happening. But yeah, the Blue Jays are the youngest average team by batting age. They average about 26 years old on their position players, which is, you know, skewed probably by, you know, Justin Smoke, but
Smustin joke.
But
they're also on a 3-game skid, and they're 11-17 on the road this year. 14 games under 500 in total.
Very bad in May.
This is the type of, you know, the Rockies came into this homestand, 10-game homestand. You kind of figured, well, if they can go 8-2, 7-3, you really start feeling good about things, which is what we said going into the last homestand that they were not very good on. And right now they're 6-1. You can get a series win over the Blue Jays in this one. You go 8-2 on a 10-game homestand, you leave home a couple of games over 500. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
They're above 500 for the first time since the second day of the season, or third day of the season, whenever it was, when they were 2-1.
2-1. It's been a while.
Won the first two games in Miami, and we all thought that 162-0 was a distinct possibility.
Very possible.
Yeah. And then what happened? It hasn't gone as according to plan since then. But the Rockies are also one of the best teams, especially the best team offensively in the month of May in baseball. We're kind of seeing this team play like they were one of those late 90s teams. Those teams went like 77 and 85, but like Pedro Astacio was out there every fifth day. It was like giving you innings, and they're just trying to bludgeon people to death, and the bullpen was terrible.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what they seem like right now, and just Germán Márquez is Pedro Astacio, you know?
Yeah.
Because the crazy thing is right now, the Rockies are where they are. They're 28 and 27. They're one game over 500 for the first time in 2 months.
They are who we thought they were.
And yet, like if you would have said, beginning of the season, hey, we're going to be going into June, the Rockies are going to be at least 500. You go, okay. Like,
yeah.
So how did they get there? Well, of their starting five in their pitching rotation, one guy's banished to the bullpen already. One guy's out for the year. The ace from last year's staff has a 7. And John Gray's got a 4.5. Like, you're like, oh, how about Jake McGee? Like, has he bounced back? No, barely pitched.
No, not really.
Wade Davis must be having a great year. Yeah, but he's been hurt. He's on the DL, IL, whatever it is. It's like, oh, well, that's super interesting. How are they 500? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know. They got a 5.09 staff ERA.
Yeah, like nobody on the team has pitched very well. Scott Oberg has been great for the most part. Germán Márquez has been as good as you expect.
Yeah.
He's been very dependable. John Gray has been fine. He's had his moments.
I'm pretty surprised that John Gray's ERA is still over 4.5. Like, he really feels like he has pitched better than that.
It's true. He does feel like he's pitched better, but you know, it's still early. Numbers can be skewed with the ERA, blah, blah, blah.
He's basically had three ugly-ish starts.
Yes.
4 2/3, you gave up 5 runs against the Phillies on the 17th of May. 4 2/3, you gave up 5 runs against the Braves on the 27th of April. I mean, really, those are the only ones that you're kind of like, ugh. He also went 5 2/3 and gave up 5 against the Brewers on May 2nd. Other than that, like 5 runs against the Dodgers in 6 innings on April 6th. It's like 3 runs, 2 runs, 1 run, 0 runs, and everything else.
So, well, I bet the rotation was pitched pretty well then. Well, besides those guys that are hurt, the guys who have been in there have been pretty terrible. Only one guy's got an ERA under 4.5. How about Sung Hwan Oh, is, you know, is he bounced back a little bit? Nah, he's got a 9.5.
Yeah, he's really bad. Really bad.
How in the world is this team a game over 500?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a fair question to ask. Like, how in the world?
Yeah.
Is this team a game over 500? And then you look at the other side of things, like, it's like, oh, well, I bet Chuck is having a great year. Yeah, he had a really bad first few weeks and a great month, and he's been on the IL for 2 weeks. Oh, okay. Story doing okay? Yeah, Story's been fine. Like, Nolan? Yeah, Nolan's been great. Nolan's been awesome. Oh, how about the Garrett Hampson, Ryan McMahon? Have they been great?
One of them. One of them's been okay.
One's starting to turn it around a little bit. Like, you know, it's like, oh, like, what's... I'm sure Ian Desmond sucked. Actually, you'd be wrong. Ian Desmond's been totally fine.
See that,
like,
one guy in our mentions today was so fired up, not
so
understanding the sarcasm of your tweet yesterday. Is Ian Desmond worth the money?
What did he do? Yeah.
He's one of those dudes who you immediately click on his bio and he's like just commenting on the attractiveness of women.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. And he's got like 12 followers.
Yep.
And also doesn't follow us. I never understand those people who, like, don't follow us. We don't follow them. And yet, for some reason, they feel the need to chime in on...
Searching Ian Desmond's name on Twitter?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, cool guy. Who doesn't understand the concept of sarcasm. But, yeah, there are not really a whole lot of things outside of the offense that that seem to give you a whole lot of clues as to how this team has won 5 straight games, 6 of 7, and 8 of 10. But there they are. And really, to be honest, like, over this stretch... they've only had a handful of games that have just been super ugly with the pitching staff. But, like, you look at the first three wins of that Arizona series, 4-3, 6-2, 5-4. Those are well-pitched games.
Yeah, very true. You
know, they pitched really well those first two games at Pittsburgh, 5-0 and 9-3, those wins.
Yeah.
So when the pitching is there, they're a really scary team. Yeah. When the pitching is not there, the offense is keeping them in it. That's
wow, the offense must be really killing it. Daniel Murphy must have been a great signing. Daniel Murphy's pretty terrible.
No, he's been bad. He's been really bad.
Save for a couple of moments, he's been very bad.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy has all of 3 home runs and an OPS now at 730.
Just like
skyrocketing, a 240 batting average. Yeah. 316 on base percentage. Yeah, he's been pretty bad. There's you know, I think the thing that you would be most surprised about, if you were to describe all of this to somebody, is, well, you know, Tony Walters is hitting .297.
Yeah.
A .760 OPS.
Has an .850 OPS.
Yeah. Yeah. If you would say
since he came back, he's been awesome.
Going into June, two of your best hitters statistically this year have been Tony Walters and Chris Iannetta. I think all of us would have been like, oh, so what are they, like 15 games under .500?
Right. Yeah.
What are they, the Toronto Blue Jays at this stage?
Yeah. No, and even, you know, David Dahl, and he's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Hitting .320 with a .900 OPS. Story's been typical Story. You know, McMahon's got his OPS over .800 now, finally. But then Raimel Tapia has come in and been an absolute spark plug for everybody in this team. He's been the gritty spark plug grinder kind of guy that the Rockies kind of need.
Yeah.
You know, he makes mistakes. That's totally true. He definitely does that. But also, they wouldn't be where they are without Raimel Tapia doing what he's been doing. Yeah.
And since he got called up, granted he's only played in 10 games, but Brendan Rodgers is a .300 hitter. He's hitting .303. Throw the hands up. The .725 OPS. And the thing is, like, yes, of all of Brendan Rodgers' hits, he has now got 12 hits at the major league, or 10 hits at the major league level. 8 of those are singles. Doesn't have a homer yet. He's only got a couple of doubles. But that's like the last thing to come along for hitters when they first get to the big league level. You got to learn how to make contact, how to get base hits.
Oh,
all
my
that.
God, I hit the ball.
Yeah.
It's the major league.
You can start developing the power and hitting to the gaps and hitting the ball over the fence. And I'm not worried about that with Brendan Rodgers at all.
No.
But.
No.
Yeah, there are some dudes on this team who, without them, the Rockies would be floundering at this stage. And yeah, yes, they are like Raimel Tapia, Tony Walters, David Dahl, obviously, with what he's been able to do. We have not talked about David Dahl that much as of yet this year.
Which is good because it means he hasn't been injury. Hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The injury was the time when we discussed him most earlier this year because we figured like, well, it's an abdominal thing for David Dahl. We'll never see him again.
That's out for the year. Yeah.
David Dahl, if he stays healthy, he is an all-star caliber player for this team. Like, he is so good. I was texting with a friend of the PDP, Rory Roth, about this yesterday. Like, David Dahl is so good. And I think because we've all wanted to maybe act like, you know, like a T-Rex's vision is based on movement. I think we figure, like, if we acknowledge David Dahl, he's going to get hurt. So we haven't really talked about it. But David Dahl is so, so good. So far this season, he's got 53 hits, 13 doubles, 2 triples, 5 home runs. He is so diverse as a talent. Like, he can do everything. And he plays good defense. Like, he's a guy who I'm comfortable with pretty much anywhere in the outfield. Man, I love him. I love that kid.
And he does so many things well. Like, that's the beauty of it. Like, you're seeing what we all saw in, like, 2016 or whatever it was. Like, the team right now, it's like, oh, McMahon's contributing. Dahl's contributing. Story's contributing. Like, it's like all of our dreams from 2016 are finally coming true.
Yeah, yeah. At Rockies versus Connor tweeted that the other day. Like, it was the all homegrown lineup, and he was like, "You would have shown me this lineup in 2014." But that's where they are right now. They're getting contributions from the dudes that you really want them to be getting the contributions from, and they're a game over 500. There's not a whole lot to complain about.
No, they started out slow at home last year too. They were like what 11-20 at home, or whatever they were, and then went like 101 the rest of the season. Those are exact numbers.
Yeah,
I work in stats. But yeah, they lost the first 5 at home this year, and then since then they've been like 15 games over 500 at home. Basically, that's what you need to do. Like, you need to win a lot of games at Coors Field, like, to be able to beat the Rockies.
You basically
and
have
make
to win
playoffs.
2/3 of your games at Coors Field and go 500 on the road. That's pretty much, in order to make the playoffs, that's pretty much what you have to do if you're the Rockies. And the Rockies are currently only 3 games over 500 at home. But, you know, they're around the 500 mark on the road. You're okay with that. The run differential, hanging in there. It's a plus one.
How about
so,
that?
So, you know, they're getting there. And they've won 8 out of 10. They've won 5 straight. They've walked off 4 times on this homestand alone. Like, there's not a whole lot to really complain about right now. They may be doing it a little bit with smoke and mirrors, but you also kind of feel like at some point, and we talked about this last year, I remember a lot, like, at some point, or maybe this was 2 years ago, there are certain guys who things cannot be this bad forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I guess the guy who we probably would apply that to most right now is Kyle Freeland. And we got some questions in. We've gotten this question over the last couple weeks. Like, at what point does Kyle Freeland need to go down to AAA? At what point does Kyle Freeland go to Albuquerque? I don't think that helps. I don't think putting Kyle Freeland in Albuquerque right now with the way the Pacific Coast League is playing in 2019, I don't think that helps a guy who has had his confidence shattered by giving up home runs. Like, if you're going to go plug him into the PCL where the home run rate is like 60% higher than it was last year, and he goes down to Albuquerque and he starts giving up 3 homers a game instead of 1.5 homers a game, like, I don't see how that's going to get anything better. Now, that being said, I don't know how much longer you can continue running him out there in the rotation every 5 days.
No, like,
and
I mean,
so I feel like maybe a phantom DL IL thing is where you have to go from here. But God, man, you can't, you know, it's ugly. He goes out there. I really had a feeling yesterday, like, all right, it's a day game at Coors Field, which always feels a little different, especially when you're a guy who grew up here and you know what those days feel like. And Kyle Freeland almost pitched a no-hitter once in a day game at Coors Field, and he had that terrific opening day start, the home opener at Coors Field in his first major league season. And, you know, maybe this is the day that Kyle Freeland gets it going. Gives up 3 runs and a homer in the first inning. Gives up the first major league home run to the opposing starter in the second inning in Taylor Clark. It was only his second big league hit at all.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know how much longer you can continue putting him out there because he's so shattered confidence. That's what he talked about with Nick Grove.
It's a command thing, too. I mean, you can see that during an at-bat, he can hit spots in the first pitch, or, you know, first strike, second strike, hit his corners, get weak contact, foul balls, whatever, called strikes. And then we saw yesterday, then the next pitch, the two strike pitch coming in was just clobbered. Like, it was right down the middle at 91.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what, six of the first 11 batters he faced yesterday gave up 100 mile an hour exit velocity or more. Like, that's insane for a guy who thrived on weak contact last year.
Yeah.
That's obviously not what you want, but like, Tim LaCastro was hitting 112 mile an hour shots to right center off him.
Yeah.
You know? And we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, trying to figure out what's wrong with Kyle Freeland. And, you know, it's a confidence thing, yes, obviously. But we mentioned that the velocity is the same. There's no, like, big drop in velocity. He was 91, 92 last year. That was not the problem. He's not going to be a 95, 96 guy. Like, the pitch selection is fairly similar this year to what it was last year. But it's seeming that the locations seemingly have shifted on Kyle Freeland, whether it's by accident or not. I mean, he's a guy, the first 2 years of his career, he lived on the outer half. Like, 60%+ of his pitches in the first 2 years in the big leagues were on the outer half. Because for a guy who's got good sink, he's a lefty, he's working away from right-handed batters, he doesn't throw 95, he needs to hit the corners. And even if he misses the corners slightly, if he throws it on the outer half of the plate, he can get enough weak contact that he can generate to get guys out and get easy out, especially with a good defensive infield that the Rockies always have. And for whatever reason, like I said, whether it's conscious or not, this year, he's pitching on the inner half way, way more. From this year to last year, inner half to outer half, it was 42-58 last year, inner half to outer half. So 42% on the inner half last year, 58 on the outer. This year, 54% on the inner half, 46% on the outer half.
And it's honestly surprising to me that it's that high. Yesterday
was 60-40 like on the inner half to outer half. The last two starts where he's been rocked, 60-40 outer half, inner half to outer half, 60-40.
Nick Groke's story on The Athletic, you should go read if you have not as of yet. But Nick side by side the heat maps of Kyle Freeland's pitches in 2018 versus 2019. And in 2018, he's got these two deep red zones, one on the inner half, like toward the inside border of the strike zone, and one on the outer half. In 2019, it's basically right over the heart of the plate. Like, everything Kyle Freeland is throwing seems to be over the heart of the plate. And so it's a command and control thing more than it seems to be an arsenal type of thing. The velocity is actually up a little bit. The movement seems to be fine on his stuff.
That's the thing. It's like control and command are different things. Like, he is
right.
He's not walking guys. I mean, for the most part, like, his strike percentage is almost the exact same last year. Actually, this year it's better. His contact rate's almost the same. His miss rate is a little bit better than last year. But you miss in the zone and you're going to get beat wholeheartedly at the big league level. And that's what's happening with Kyle Freeland. Like, he's not walking the ballpark. He's missing in the zone over the middle of the plate.
It has not been fun.
He's getting a higher chase rate this year. Like, you know, he's getting squeezed a little bit more, but not, it's somewhat negligible. The called strike rate's a little bit down, but not bad. 33-30. Like, that's not that bad in terms of percentage. Yeah. Like, you know, there are things that you're like, oh, getting more swings, higher miss rate, lower contact rate, higher strike percentage. But at the same time, you're like, oh, well, there's a difference between 91 on the corner and 91 down the middle.
Yeah. And that's the – and we have fans who tune in to the podcast who are not – who are more casual baseball fans. The difference between command and control is basically your ability to throw strikes, to put the ball in the strike zone. Command is where you put the ball in the strike zone, pretty much. It's kind of the way you put you hit your spots. You precisely pinpoint where you want to put it. So for Kyle Freeland, the control is okay because the pitchers are still in the zone. The command of where they're landing in the zone is nowhere to be found this year.
Yeah.
And that's led to just nothing but like nine-figure exit velocities.
No, and he's allowed as many home runs he did all last year already.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens when you leave 91 in the middle.
Each of his first two seasons, he allowed 17 home runs, and he is already there.
Like, and you look at it too, you're like, oh, well, let's look at like regression stats, like batting average on balls in play. Maybe that's abnormally high. Nope. Exact same number as it was last year.
Yeah.
Exact same.
Yeah, it's been very concerning. But I think the overall moral of this is we've heard so often, you know, the Rockies did that last year with John Gray. They sent John Gray back to Albuquerque for a little while. He came back and looked like a different guy at times.
Eventually.
Like an improved guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then he goes out and has the one bad start against the Nationals, and everybody turns it into, well, John Gray is a failed project and you should move on from him, which I find kind of interesting. The way that John Gray, when he struggles in a start, the reaction that that gets from fans and media members versus Kyle Freeland, who has been atrocious for the better part of this season. And the conversation is never of the same tenor. And I get it. He's the local guy and everybody wants to, you know, make some narratives out of the season that he had last year and yada, yada, yada. But it just seems like, you know, there was that game that John Gray allowed 3 runs over 6 2/3, left with a no decision. The bullpen blew it late. And the headline on Rockies.com was like, Gray starts strong, falters late in loss.
Like homers hurt Gray again or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like that conversation only seems to latch itself onto John Gray, which frustrates the hell out of me. Yes. But anyway.
No, and that's true because, I mean, and in the locker room after the game yesterday, they're getting like quotes from Daniel Murphy, like asking, hey, what would you tell Kyle Freeland like going forward at this point? And Murphy gave a great quote saying, like, I look him in the eyes and say, I need you out there every fifth day because we do. It's like, yeah, that's great. But like, you weren't asking, you know, Nolan that about John Gray last year.
Right.
Well, he was struggling. Like,
and I don't mean to put it this way, but like, do you need a guy out there every fifth day who's got a 7 ERA? Like at this stage, not really.
Oh.
You need somebody out there who's going to perform and execute, but Kyle Freeland is not that guy right now. He's got an ERA of 7.13. And we want Kyle Freeland, everybody wants Kyle Freeland to be the guy he was last year and the guy that he was in 2017. But there is an issue here that is not going away. Kyle Freeland last season went 17-7 with a 2.85 ERA, gave up 17 homers. The numbers were so good across the board last year. This season, he's 2-6. The ERA is 7.13. Wins and losses are garbage, obviously. But he made 33 starts last year and was tagged with 7 losses. In 12 starts this year, he's got 6.
Yeah.
The walk numbers, you know, not outrageously bad, but still not good. 25-59 1/3. He struck out 49. He's never going to be a huge strikeout guy. But that home run number is the thing that leaps out at you. 16 home runs allowed in 59 1/3 innings. Last year, it was 17 and 2/3.
Yeah.
He's allowed 47 earned runs this year. He allowed 64 all last season in 3 times as many starts.
Well, and we talked about this too before. Like, the issue is, like, who is going to come up and replace him? And the Rockies right now are starting to realize there is somebody down in AAA that can come up because, you know, Hoffman's here. He's, you know, for all the grief we've given Hoffman because he starts out so slowly in some of these games, he has done enough to keep the team in the games that he has pitched so far this season. He's a five and dive guy right now, but he is, when it's looked like it's going,
I want him to get it figured out.
It's looked like it's going to turn on him and really go downhill, he has found something within him to get himself out of that inning, get himself through five, and give a team a chance to win. That is a
base. He's pitched 5 innings in each start.
That is all you ask for at some point for a guy like Jeff Hoffman, right?
Yeah,
now.
Only gave up 3 runs against the D-backs on Wednesday. Yeah. Like, he's
Sensatella is gonna give you 2 good starts and 1 horrid start every single time. But you know what you're getting from him. Like, he's gonna be there. Right now, Peter Lambert in AAA, 22-year-old, one of the top Rockies prospects. Last 3 starts, he has really, really started to figure it out. Last starts, he's gone at least 6 in all 3 of them. Given up 8 runs in 20 innings. That's a 3.60 ERA, a 20-1. Strikeout to walk ratio in that time as well. He had a poor start at Fresno, which is, you know, PCL, obviously, before that stretch. But even the start before that, back on May 8th, 7 innings, a 1-run ball at El Paso. He is starting to become a guy that looks like he's major league ready. And it is a matter of, what do you do if you're the Rockies? Do you flip-flop Peter Lambert and Kyle Freeland? That would be a very tough decision to make. But unless you start seeing some kind of good signs from Kyle Freeland, how do you keep letting him go out there every fifth day and just get his whole confidence shattered the way that it seems to have been right now? Like, you look at Kyle Freeland giving some interviews after the game yesterday. He looks like a broken human being. And it breaks all of our hearts. I mean, we don't, especially for a guy like Kyle Freeland, a Denver kid, like, you know, what we see, like, everybody who watches the Rockies as a Rockies fan sees a little bit of themselves in Kyle Freeland.
Yeah.
You know, he grew up watching the team the same way that we did. He's a he was a fan of the team before he was their ace. And right. Now he's struggling so much, it's really hard for a lot of us to fathom. And we don't want to see him struggle because we see enough struggling in the world. We don't want to see someone like Kyle Freeland struggling too. He's supposed to be the one that succeeds, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to throw out a name for you to keep an eye on. And I don't think that there is a chance in hell that you have ever guessed, given our baseball history together, that I would be throwing out this name. But a guy to maybe keep an eye on, Tim Melville.
Oh, my God.
Remember Tim Melville?
I do remember Tim Melville. Royals high
prospect.
First
round pick. Yeah. Tim Melville signed with the Rockies, I believe, as a minor league free agent. But so far, I mean, he's only made four starts down there. But so five innings in each start. He pitched against El Paso at home in Albuquerque on the 16th, five innings of one hit ball, didn't allow a run. Last time out against Sacramento, 5 2/3 at home, gave up five runs and a couple of homers on eight hits. But the start before that at Las Vegas, two earned runs over 5 1/3. Like, Tim Melville's a guy with big league experience and a guy who, if you're not I'm not saying he's the answer. What I'm saying is, if you're not ready to go the route of Peter Lambert as of yet, that's somebody who maybe you look at for something like a spot start.
The Rockies in the Atlantic also, League, the Long Island Ducks, before he got signed by the Rockies, by the way.
Yeah. It's, woof.
We watched him pitch in Wilmington in 2010. He was the Carolina League when we were in Myrtle Beach. And that year in Wilmington, as a first-round pick, he went 2-12 with a 4.97 in the Carolina League.
Yikes.
2-12 in the Carolina League is hard to do.
And he was a very, very highly touted pick.
Yes, he was.
When he came out of high school. And I believe it was a Missouri. Oh, hi, Leica. I believe it was a Missouri.
Wentzville High School.
Native?
Yeah, Wentzville, Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah, when the Royals drafted him, it was like one of those, you know, he's a hometown dude.
And I remember.
They had a few of those.
I remember calling and saying he was from Pete Wentzville because Fall Out Boy was big then.
Oh, yeah, man, that's a dated joke.
Yeah. Apparently his
I lied. He was not a first-round pick. He was a fourth-round pick.
His nickname is Smellville. Literally says that on Baseball Reference. Woody or Smellville is his nickname.
But
so I'm going to call him
you
Smellville.
You need those guys sometimes. Yeah. One other thing to keep in mind, the Rockies have had Chris Russen out on rehab over the last month, basically. His numbers have not been great. Overall, combined between Albuquerque and Hartford, he's got a 5.14 ERA. Check that, a 5.68 ERA. 5.14 in Hartford as of right now. Either way, they haven't been good numbers. And if they feel like Chris Russen, you don't really base the rehab things on numbers. If they feel like he might be ready to go, then he provides a long relief option. Then do the Rockies look at Chad Bettis again?
Nah,
like
I think
kind of
Chad
a worrisome
Bettis,
spot.
I think Chad Bettis has figured out that he should be a bullpen guy. He has been very, very good in that role this year for the Rockies.
He picked up a save the other day. That's
it was incredible. Like, I didn't even realize it was the ninth inning. I was like, oh, I just saw Chad Bettis pitching. I was like, oh, it must be like the seventh. And then I saw him ground out two outs of the ninth, and I was like, that's the ballgame. Okay.
Chad Bettis as a reliever has a 1.77 ERA.
Yeah. Like
a 1.03 whip. Like, that game in Boston notwithstanding, like, he's actually been pretty good out of the bullpen.
He's throwing hard.
That game in Boston
5-1
like,
K to walk ratio.
At least he didn't, you know, leave anything in suspense.
No, it was three pitches.
Wasn't that
it was
two
like
pitches?
It's a two pitches
three
that was
pitches?
Done, yeah.
No, it was two. Yeah. Two pitches. Gave up the leadoff double, right?
Yeah.
And then a homer? And then the walk-off.
That's it, yeah. But yeah, he was an 8.78 ERA as a starter this year, 1.77 in the bullpen. He's going to be in the bullpen from now on, and that's fine. The Rockies need guys that can go two innings at a time, especially since their starting rotation's not giving them length.
And we said forever, like, Chad Bettis is really good when he faces a lineup one time. He's not really good beyond that.
Yeah.
In fact, he's very bad.
Which is what he's doing right now, which is awesome. Yeah.
Hell yeah, Huskers.
What?
5-4 Nebraska over UConn, bottom of the fourth.
Ooh.
Just got a caught stealing in that.
I've never even heard of those people before. What are you talking about?
When you don't go to a college that has Division I baseball, Anthony.
Nope, you just go there when you play a three.
So
look at like Chad Bettis' numbers.
They got just question marks.
Real quick, the OPS for Chad Bettis first time through the year, second time through, third time through. OPS first time through for Chad Bettis as a starter this year, let's just say. 4.68. That's OPS. Like, that's incredible.
That's good.
Second time through, 1.615.
Nah, it's not good.
I mean, like, that's ridiculous. Like,
how does it make that big of a jump from the first to the second time, like, through? It's one thing if it's like 4.68 and then 7.85
and then 1,000
and then 1062. But like
468 Yikes. To 1615, 1,200 point jump in OPS from the time the lineup turns over. It's like, yeah, I think he should be a reliever. Really, I mean, that's totally fine, and he's good at that. Yikes. Clearly.
Yikes. So it just all comes back to what is the next step with Kyle Freeland, and thankfully we don't have to make those decisions.
But
and
someone does. Segway.
I feel like that segues quite well into this quote.
Someone who's quote, not a brain surgeon.
I think I'm personally blessed with a capacity to not really care what is said about me all that much. I don't really buy into the whole media evaluation. The reality is, and this is going to sound petty and bad.
Hey, he's
if
right.
If you just objectively look at the people who are evaluating us every day, you know they've never come close to doing this job and all the work that goes into it. And most of them, probably 99% of them, they've never even led anything in their lives. They've worked for themselves. They've been self-interested beat writers who have worked for themselves, and they have a job to do every day. I had the good fortune of seeing that for a long time before taking this job, so I knew not to put a whole lot of time and energy into what they think about me. That
there's a lot to unpack there.
Colorado Rockies general manager Jeff Breidich, in a quote from a book called If These Walls Could Talk, by Drew Goodman with our buddy Benjamin Hockman, who was the ghostwriter for it, which is supposed to be like one of those fun, cheesy bargain bin books about like fun 101
things
these
fans should do before they die. Yeah,
right, exactly. Like one of those stupid things. And somehow this quote makes it into that book of Jeff Breidich just destroying beat writers. And there is so much to take out of this. He also included another line, quote, "It'd be like if I went to a hospital every day and wrote a blog about the job done by one of the surgeons and the things he screwed up. That's crazy. I know nothing about brain surgery, nor have I ever even worked on the path to become a brain surgeon. That's what goes on in this industry and other sports industries." First of all, you're not a brain surgeon, and being a general manager of a baseball team is not brain surgery.
Yeah.
That was the thing to me that was the most insulting. Yeah. I don't care if you want to be like all MAGA, fake news, the media is the problem with everything. Whatever. You work in sports. You're one of those people who's going to be that way. That's fine. Don't compare yourself to a brain surgeon. You make decisions about guys who play a game for a living. Come on, man. Come on.
And also, like, I remember Jeff Breidich when he played and was a 14-time All-Star.
Right,
the New York Yankees back in the day.
It was a first-round draft pick and a guy who just had the weight of the world on his shoulders. Jeff Breidich never played professional baseball, was never drafted, did not play a single game in the minor league. So
it's crazy that he would think that he knows what he's doing when it comes to this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, by that logic.
By his own logic. That's interesting.
By this quote, you know they've never come close to doing this job and all the work that goes into it. By that very quote, Jeff Breidich is not qualified to evaluate professional baseball players. You never did that job.
That's interesting.
Huh. I just like, Jesse Spector had the best tweet about this, and that whole night, first of all, what's weird is Renee Deckert, your longtime family friend, Renee tweeted about this like weeks ago, and it, for whatever reason, did not come up outside of Rocky's Twitter for like one night. And then for some reason, I don't know if it's because the book came out or what it was, but somehow Saunders ended up tweeting a link to a mailbag in which he had addressed it. And of course, Saunders put it in just a very insulted and hurt way on Twitter, which, you know, if I was a
beaver,
I would too.
Sure.
And then it just blew up, and then it caught fire on the national media level, and Andy McCullough had the tweet. I don't know. I feel like I could build a team that never wins the division.
Also, Andy McCullough is one of the best at what he does. He's also the reason why I unfollow almost every single Dodgers beat writer ever, because they all try to be like him.
He was so good when he was with the the Royals, and he turned when he such
he's still
a heel.
Such a good writer though. Like, and that's the thing.
Yeah,
I see him in LA. I read his stuff in the paper every Sunday. But like, he is very smarmy, just like Joe Davis.
Yeah, Joe Davis. But it this is Jesse Spector's. Wait, now I can't find it. Hang on.
Let me production meeting.
Okay, here it is. Quote, hot take, a general manager who runs a team worried about what the beat writers are going to say is a general manager who will fail at the job. But also, there are ways to express this that don't make it sound like the writers are all complete hacks. That's, I think, the crux of the issue. If you're Jeff Breidich and you want to say, like, hey, it's not my job to really care about what the media thinks or what people outside of this organization think. My job is to get the trust of these guys and win baseball games. That's correct.
That's totally 100% accurate.
But to go out there and just shit all over these dudes for some reason, and
it's not even guys that we like, you know.
Right. I said this yesterday. I think there is a better than decent chance that Jeff Breidich is referring to guys like Mark Kisla and Woody Page and James Merrillat and these other dudes who, if you Google Jeff Breidich quote, by the way, the first thing that comes up is a James Merrillat column on 1043thefan.com, which you cannot pay me money to
click bookmark on that one for later.
But I think that's more than likely what he's referring to. And oh my God, UConn shortstop just made the craziest catch I've ever seen in my life. But I think he used beat writers as a catch-all term to apply to these dudes. You got to keep in mind, when Jeff Breidich took this job, like, the sports show was still the Denver Post's big foray into trying to talk baseball with Woody Page and Les Shapiro.
Les Shapiro,
like, we're the first people in town to admit how bad the Denver sports media is talking about baseball.
Yeah.
And if Jeff Breidich believes that a million times more than us, that's fine. But you are also the general manager of a baseball team. You are the guy who is supposed to be acting the most professional as the outward face of the organization. And to just throw everybody who conveys your product to the public under the bus like this, that I don't understand. And if I was Nick Groke, if I was Thomas Harding, like, what did you do, especially if I'm Thomas Harding, like, what did you do to get crapped on like this?
Right.
That's so, so trashy. And Nick yesterday tweeted, we're all just lowly fans of the game and most of us never played professionally, but I think it's probably okay if we talk about baseball today. No Ivy League degree required.
No, like, these guys that are like, listen, like, we may not like Saunders and his work and whatever, but you know, they're there every day. They travel, like, and they do the same grind. I mean, as Breidich and as the players, because they got to travel. They're on the planes. They're in the hotels. They're early wake up calls, you know, going to bed late. Like, they're on deadline too. Like, we may not like the product they put out, but we know that the work that they do is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say this, we obviously, like you said, we've had our issues with Patrick Saunders forever. I guarantee you Jeff Breidich cannot do that job. I guarantee you.
No.
Do I think Patrick Saunders could be a Major League General Manager? No. Do I think Nick Groke or Thomas Harding or any of these guys could be Major League General Managers? Maybe if they had, you know, 15 years of working in a front office and doing all those things, possibly. But at the same time, if you're Jeff Breidich saying these guys have never done this job and therefore cannot comment on it and cannot complain about it, you are complaining about guys doing a job you have never done. Like, how is that any different, man?
I got nothing.
What?
It's such a bad look, and it's so unnecessary too.
That's
because
the thing.
Like, the team is playing so well. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Somebody tweeted at us yesterday, and I replied and said, perfectly said. They said this is an unforced error. The Rockies are playing so good right now. There's no reason for this, and it just makes them look bad at a time when they're rebuilding all this goodwill from the beginning of the season. And now, granted, it's not as though Jeff Breidich came out in an interview last week and said,
this was obviously in the can for a long time.
God knows when this happened. They've been putting this book together for a couple of years, like Kramer.
We should ask Ben what that quote was, because Benjamin Hawk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Book for Drew Goodman. We should ask him when that quote actually came about. I wonder when it actually was. I'd be curious.
It's like when Elaine's trying to get the good Jay Peterman stories and Kramer's buying Bunyan stories from Newman. Like, it seems like that was kind of the caliber of all this being put together. But still, the fact that, like, it's not like he just went out last week and said this while they were on a winning streak, but it comes out right now, and when was this ever going to be a good look? And for you to lead the quote off by saying, this is going to sound petty and bad.
It's like, yeah, you're right.
Yep.
It's like, no offense, yes, but I hate you and you're ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. And it turned into such a big thing on baseball Twitter the other day. And I just, I don't know, man. It's, you know, the other thing that I think plays into this a lot, and there was a tweet from a guy who writes a little bit for Baseball Prospectus and has done some other stuff, Lance Brodowski. Sorry, Lance, I'm sure I butchered your name, but it's okay because you probably don't listen to the podcast. Anyway, he said, quote, I'm perplexed as to what I should think about this quote from Rockies GM Jeff Breidich, given the amount of baseball writers and analysts hired to baseball ops roles just in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
That is the perfect point. Because you look at all these dudes who have come up from doing things like writing for Fangraphs, writing for Baseball Prospectus. I've got a friend who's a scout with an American League team who got his start writing for I don't even know if this site still exists as far as baseball sites go anymore, but scout.com used to have like baseball affiliate sites. He wrote for that and then got hired as a scout with a major league team. You know, dudes who, Ryan Parker,
Kevin Goldstein,
with Baseball Prospectus. Who took over as one of the player development director guys. Like those
Jason
guys
Parks
do
with the
pretty
Cubs.
Good
yeah.
work. Yeah. Jason Parks. Those guys do pretty good work and they get recognized for it. And,
and they get hired and they've got their teams win World Series, like, you know?
Yeah. Like that makes this even more perplexing. Yeah. It's just like, Jeff Breidich is one of those guys that old school baseball people complain about because he's an Ivy League graduate who never played at the professional level. But he's taking that same line of logic and applying it to media members who have also established a pipeline into these development jobs and these front office jobs.
Yeah.
I just like the whole thing just is so strange. It's so weird.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all.
And I do feel bad for dudes like Saunders and Groke and Troy Rank and Thomas Harding and all these dudes who have been on this beat, all these interns who have come up with MLB.com over the last several years, who are in the front office in the clubhouse every day, and now the GM of a major league organization is saying, like, you're a loser.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm rubber, all you're right. glue, dude. Like,
it's so weird. And it just blew up the other day, and we felt like we should probably talk about it. Yeah, Skurs! 6-4 lead in the fifth. This is going to be terrible when they lose this game, and then this is this is post this later, and everybody's like, now that game worked out for
and
you.
Then what happened?
But anyway, so the Rockies having won five straight now and 6 of 7 on this homestand. Welcome in the Toronto Blue Jays this evening. There was one other dude that I think we should talk about who was a reply to our first tweet this morning about when we were recording, and it's our good buddy Zach Wingrovius, who said, quote, can you do a few minutes on how awesome Ryan McMahon is? I can't help but see an all-star caliber guy. Am I crazy? McMahon is the embodiment of what Breidich thought he wanted with Desmond. Can play first, but versatile, athletic, and then in parentheses, can probably dunk. Good clubhouse guy, handsome. That really hits the nail on the head. And Ryan
McMahon
started slowly.
He was a quarterback, so he fits with in high school, it's the Rockies profile of what
the
they want to do.
Rockies profile. Michael Vick. Yeah. Russell Wilson. Todd Helton.
Seth Smith.
Seth Smith, Ryan McMahon, they're good with the court. Kyle Parker, hashtag free Kyle Parker, they're good with it. Ryan McMahon, though, this has finally been kind of like the stretch that I think we were all hoping was coming from Ryan McMahon. As of May 11th, he was a .220
great
hitter
day.
With a .651 OPS.
Sorry, it's my birthday.
It's a terrible day.
It's my birthday.
As of the 30th, yesterday, when he went 3-for-4 with a double and a homer for your, my, and our Colorado Rockies, he is now a .260 hitter with an .805 OPS. And I think Zach's point is very well taken in that he plays first, does it pretty well, was drafted as a third baseman, so he could do that, also plays second exceedingly well. And I remember a couple years ago, we talked to Ryan McMahon on the show, and he said, like, no, I asked to play second base.
Right.
Like, I was taking some grounders there, like, on a lark, basically, during spring training, and I went to Zach Wilson, the Rockies' awesome director of player development, and said, like, hey, I want to play second. Like, can you put me in at second? And they started using him there, I think, in spring training games first, and then got him some time when he was with the Yard Goats, actually working at second base. Ryan McMahon's a really good second baseman, yeah. And that has honestly surprised me. I thought he was going to be like a somewhat below replacement
clunky,
level second baseman.
Yeah,
like, yeah, because he's kind of a bigger dude, yeah. But like really fluid. His footwork is good. The way he works around the bag is
good. He's not DJ, but he's, you know, he's,
yeah, but that's fine.
Improving. Yeah, I mean,
he's really
good. In those last 13 games really since May 12th, he's slashing .361, .465, .722 for an .1187 OPS, 3 home runs, 8 RBI, 8 Ks. Versus 7 walks. That is very, very good.
Good.
Hitting the ball hard, too. Average exit velocity in that time is 94 miles an hour.
It's so nice having the sounds of nature in the
background. Yeah, right. She's like, she's rolling around in the grass right now. She has barked by herself. Oh, she did it again. What is this? What is this? What are you doing?
Ryan McMahon, though, is, I think that's a very astute observation, that Ryan McMahon right now seems to be the guy who they hoped Ian Desmond was going to be.
Yeah.
And yes, we'll discuss. We need to give Ian Desmond some credit for the way he has looked over the last month. But Ryan McMahon, especially with the fact that it seemed like it came at the crossroads moment for him, he's really stepped up. They sent Garrett Hampson down. They called up Brendan Rodgers, and it seemed like it's now or never for Ryan McMahon, and he has really responded.
He really has. And he also had a nice tweet this morning, or I guess yesterday. Chipotle tweeted out, turn on your notifications, $1 million in free burritos right here, 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. And Ryan McMahon quote tweeted it and said, this is a dream come true.
Oh, man. But, you know, it would be one of those things where, like, when a corporate CEO wins the Powerball, that would be like a major leaguer winning Chipotle.
Right.
Exactly. $1 million for the Chipotle. Like, no, man, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's been pretty cool to see.
Yeah, they went behind the scenes on the Rockies Instagram last night doing it with, like, the Rockies chef. And like, how they like they can send in their orders so they'll be ready when he gets there. And like the stuff they were making was like smoked lobster tails and like Colorado lamb shanks.
Meatloaf?
It was unbelievable looking.
Yeah.
Good Lord. They eat well.
Yeah. I would like some.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah. It's pretty much the same that we ate in the Carolina.
Almost the exact same.
Pretty much, you know. And if you take out smoked lobster tail and instead PB&J, but no J because like the clubby ran out of it. So just like peanut butter between two pieces of white bread. It's pretty much the same.
It's basically the same thing as when we would go to Dagwood's before we got to work and then keep the sandwich in the fridge and then get everything.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or like buy an extra sandwich.
Yeah.
So you could have it later. Oh, I miss Dagwood's so much though.
Yep.
It's like the thing I miss most about Myrtle Beach. Dagwood's and Mr. Fish. Those are the, and this little Lebanese place that I don't even remember the name of, but was actually like shockingly good. And the one pizza place off of Forest Brook Road.
Yes.
Anyway, but they have found something really, really good with what they've got with Ryan McMahon. And I think another thing that has come along with that is Brendan Rodgers has played like a guy who doesn't feel like he needs to be pressing at the major league level. You get called up for your big league debut, they throw you in there every day. That can be really tough on a young player. And Brendan Rodgers has been up now for over 2 weeks, and he's played in 10 games. I think he started 8. And, you know, he's a .303 hitter with a .725 OPS. You know, he struck out 12 times to 3 walks, like some of the things you kind of expect of a young player. But he's not out there every day just, like, scuffling and struggling and trying to figure out if he can make it as a major league guy. And I think that's because Ryan McMahon has taken some of that pressure off.
It's not like we saw with Garrett Hampson earlier this year where every time he got up, you saw just, like, it looked like he was already 0-2 when the bat started.
Yeah, which is a real bummer.
Yeah.
I haven't even checked to see how Garrett Hampson's been doing since he went back down.
He's been all right.
To the old ABQ. Let's give it a look here. Garrett Hampson is a .283 hitter with an .827 OPS. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Good with that.
Yeah, He'll get there.
So then there's Ian Desmond. And overall, his numbers now sit at .244, .318, .463.
Which, like, you know, it's,
that means
okay, it's fine, but yeah,
his April numbers were 203, 247, 392 for a .639 OPS in 24 games. In 23 games in May, Ian Desmond is now slashing .309, .420, .588. That dude's come along.
It's something that I don't think anybody saw coming. No matter what they'll tell you on Twitter. Yeah.
Right.
And even then, right. I don't think he saw 309, 425, 88 coming.
No. And it's, on the one hand, it's obviously great. It's something that, you know, forever we've been hoping to see from Ian Desmond.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's like, yeah, it took 2+ seasons to make this adjustment.
Yeah.
That's
the thing. Like, he stopped hitting the ball on the ground. He's hitting the ball in the air. And
it's good.
It's great.
That's great. But we were also all saying that 2 years ago. Yeah. So it would have been nice to see this at one time.
I mean, it is. He increased average by 100 points, his OPS by 180 points, and his slugging by 200 points from April to May.
God, that is nuts.
Like, that's okay. The OPS went up almost 400 points.
I also want to point out something that I know will solve all of the Rockies' issues this year. Ian Desmond on Mondays this year, 278 hitter, 889 OPS. Tuesdays, 308 hitter, 977 OPS.
Okay.
Wednesdays, 350 hitter, 935
okay.
OPS.
Okay.
Thursdays, 250, 1118.
Okay. Okay.
Fridays, 220, 622. Saturdays, 053 the batting average, 189 the OPS.
So
Ian Desmond is 1-for-19 on Saturdays this year with 9 strikeouts.
So it means that Ian Desmond's working for the weekend, if you know what I mean.
Ian Desmond's getting after it on Thursday and Friday night.
He's a weekend warrior, you know. Yeah.
So just don't play him on Saturdays, and Ian Desmond, problem solved.
That is super weird.
Isn't that strange? Let's see what he batted. Let's see what he
on Saturdays. Yeah.
Saturdays last year, he hit 224 with a 679 OPS. It's pretty bad.
That's probably,
although
probably
it was worse
day.
On Thursdays, yeah. 167 with a 550
that's
OPS.
So weird.
2017, not bad. Yeah. No, actually, 2017, 259 average, but a 599 OPS.
Oy.
So that's pretty terrible.
Oy.
Huh, it's interesting. So what we've established is just that Ian Desmond doesn't like playing on Saturdays. We solved it. We fixed
it.
He
never rolled.
This is all... You think we can't do that job, Jeff Bridges?
He doesn't roll on the Sabbath,
Ian
man.
Desmond.
Shomer Shabbos. Is Ian Desmond Jewish? Is it a Shomer Shabbos situation? I don't roll on the Sabbath.
Do we know Bo Bridges? but, you know, we've
Did
said
Nick
a bajillion
John Stamos?
Over the last... is that
John Stamos? Did Nick know John Stamos?
Bajillion times on this show, like, we want Ian Desmond to be successful. Everybody wants Ian Desmond to be successful. There's like one dude on this roster that, like, if he's not successful, you're like, whatever, I don't really like him anyway. And that's Daniel
Murphy.
like, Ian Desmond, great dude. We've told the story a bajillion times about Ian Desmond and my little buddy at the Big Brothers event a couple years ago. Like, Ian Desmond is a great human being who we would like to see be successful, and he's been really good over the last month, and hopefully that will continue.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think that's
really
all we need
to say. Let's keep it going.
Keep it rolling, Ian.
Good for you, Ian.
Seems like a positive development. What else are we going to talk about?
Do you have some Ask PDPs?
We've yelled about enough.
Yeah.
Do we have any Ask PDPs? I'm sure we have some stragglers.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, this is a pretty decent one from at Colorado Zebo. I don't have an Ask PDP about it, but I'd appreciate if some of the next pod be dedicated to the frustration about how long it takes to move along with these veteran guys. They suck. There's so much talent in the organization. Use it. Make moves. Bangs head against wall repeatedly.
This is in reference to, I think, the Rockies bullpen yesterday. I mean, listen, Brian Shaw got hit yesterday. Brian Shaw pitched for the fourth time in 5 days, like five in his last seven.
Yeah,
like,
that was not
you
great.
Know, at some point, Bud Black doesn't have anybody else to go to, but this is what Brian Shaw did in Cleveland. He pitched pretty much every day under Tito Francona, and you could tell last year he was gassed. He had nothing left in his arm. You don't want to get to that point again with Brian Shaw. So let's let Brian sit a little bit, but at the same time, you can only do so much when your starters are giving you three innings. So that's tough. But like someone like Sung Hwan Oh, who has been nothing but terrible this year for the most part, except he has vultured 3 wins, which is like second on the team, which is hilarious.
Makes sense.
But like yesterday, he vultured a win yesterday. I seen vultured as a tag game when he came in, but whatever.
Yeah, scoreless inning.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, like, is Yency Almonte a worse option than Sung Hwan Oh? I don't think so. I think Yency Almonte's shown he can be a big leaguer out of the bullpen. Is you know, when Chris Russon comes back, if he's ready, I mean, he's probably going to get called up. You have to imagine, you know, who gets bumped for him. Like, and that's yesterday when Jake McGee came into that game. I had no idea Jake McGee was actually active on the roster because I don't remember seeing him for like weeks. Do you know he was active on the roster?
I think I did vaguely remember the transaction where they activated him, but like didn't remember seeing him in games.
Well, like he had,
I was like, oh yeah.
He last time he pitched for yesterday was May 25th. That was the Saturday game against Baltimore. They lost. Through an inning and 2/3, gave it 3 hits, no runs. Pitched 2 days before that in the 14-6 game. Pitched a third of an inning. Like, then May 18th, he pitched a 1-batter, gave up a hit. Like, either Jake McGee is hurt, or like they just don't trust him to do anything at all.
Yeah,
like
that could be also.
Jake McGee hasn't given up a run this season, by the way, in 6 appearances. I'm not saying Jake McGee's good. I'm saying like he hasn't given up a run yet. 4 strikeouts, no walks. Like either he's hurt or he should not be on the roster taking up a spot. Let somebody else who can actually pitch, who is healthy enough to pitch, do it. But I think it's very odd that Jake McGee has pitched like 4 times in the 2.5 weeks he's been up, has not given up a run or anything, and just they refuse to pitch him. Isn't that weird?
That is actually really strange. Yeah? That is really
Isn't
strange.
That super weird?
Yeah, looking at his numbers right now, it is. I guess I did not. This kind of flew under
he's
the radar.
He's given up inherited runners.
Weird
That's
this
fine,
is
but
been.
Like, you know.
He's pitched in 6 games in 2 months.
Yeah. I know he's hurt, obviously.
Granted, he hasn't been healthy for that whole time. But yeah, like it's, you know, had him back on the active roster for a couple of weeks now, and he's pitched in 4 games.
And he's only pitched in like blowouts for the most part, or like when he had to yesterday, you know?
Yeah. A little strange.
Right, like that's all I'm saying. Like that's weird. Even when his first 2 outings were pitching in blowouts, like.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like at some point you got to either, you know, cut the cord or start pitching him. I don't know.
And it is, you know, this has been kind of the MO of the Rockies over the last several years is they just don't move to the young guys that quickly. You know, Yency Almonte comes up from Albuquerque, throws in 8 games in relief, puts up a 2.45 ERA, and then he's gone back to Albuquerque. You know, Jairo Diaz, thankfully, I think they've trusted with a little bit more, but Jairo Diaz is an older guy. He's been up at the major league level before, 5 games so far, 2.70 ERA. He's been pretty good.
Fantastic so far. Like, we got to be so excited about Jairo Diaz. We can mention him for a second, but like, he's been awesome this year. It's been so welcome to see, considering his story and everything, what he's had to battle back through. Like,
right.
It's a real story of coming back over adversity, not like Addison Russell, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of frustrating because you want to see all these young dudes, all these talented dudes get chances, but we've kind of learned over the last few years, you can't really expect that right away with the Rockies. So you just try to like grin and bear it. While they keep going with the veteran guys. But, you know, some of the veteran guys are starting to get it figured out, you know, Ian Desmond being one of them. And you hope that maybe that's a sign of some progression back to the mean for some of these older guys. But that actually dovetails very well into a question from Jen Winters at JE Winter 22. How do the Rockies compare to other teams in the number of bullpen innings pitched so far this season? Follow-up question to that, when should I start to get worried?
Well,
we should probably tap dance while you
that is
that
always
up.
A tried and true thing for the Rockies about like taxing their bullpen so early in the season. That's always ends up being an issue with them. So they're, you know, the starters don't go deep into games, bullpen gets used early, gets overworked, and by time July and August hit, they've got nothing left. Right now the Rockies bullpen this season has thrown 200 innings, which is the 6th most in the National League.
God, what?
Just in the National League?
Who's thrown more? Who are these 5 teams?
The Brewers,
the Marlins.
Brewers, Giants, Pirates, really? D-backs, and Braves. The Marlins had the 3rd fewest innings from their bullpen, actually.
Wow, it's because they're down like 11-0 by the 3rd, and they're like, just wear it.
Jose Urania, you're going 8 today no matter what. The Nationals, the fewest, then the Dodgers, and the Marlins, then the Cubs. Funny how that works. Yeah, the Rockies are, you know, they're right
the
in
Nationals
there.
Nationals have the fewest, but somehow have the worst bullpen.
So, yeah, the Nationals have the fewest bullpen innings, and their bullpen ERA, I believe, currently would be the 2nd worst in Major League history.
My God.
It is currently at 7. It is at 7.23 is their bullpen ERA. Only the 1930 Philadelphia Phillies were worse, I believe, for a full season.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. Dave Martinez is just like, we can't go to the bullpen.
Well, and also they have Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin.
Right, true. Like, they have some inning feeders.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that starting staff, how that team is so bad right now.
Yeah. So listen, the Rockies are something. They are not as bad as we think. It's been
that's great. Actually kind of surprising to me.
Well,
sixth most just in the National League.
And you know, it's a little bit, you know, skewed. Like the last few weeks, hasn't been great. The starters have not been giving them a lot of length. They get through five, it's fine. But like you're using like, you know, Jairo Diaz pitched 4 out of 6 games in this homestand. Like Brian Shaw's pitched 5 of the last 7 days. Like, you don't want that. You know, you don't want that at all. You want to get those guys a little bit of rest at least. It's not what you want.
It's not what you want, as Joe Girardi would say. Here's one from Tristan Boyce. This is actually from prior to our last episode, but one that we forgot to get to that I think is a good one to get to. Quote, assuming that Story, Rogers, McMahon, and Hampson all end up being major league everyday starters, what do the Rockies do with them? Move Hampson to center and McMahon to first? Do any of them become trade pieces? The problem with that question is the premise in that I don't think that can happen because there's not enough spots for them all.
Well, yeah, unless that Hampson moves to center. I mean, and he becomes a center.
Right, that would be the only – well, and still out of Rogers and McMahon, one of those guys is going to have to move.
Yeah.
One of those guys is going to have to go to – I mean, obviously it would be McMahon going to first, but yeah, it's not Daniel Murphy now.
Or we're saying, like, you know, if things go wild, I guess, go squiffy, McMahon's at first, Rogers is at second, Story's at short, and Hampson in center. That's the only way they could probably happen for them to all be big leaguers pretty much at the same time, because Story's obviously going to be there. Story has built up enough capital now, he is a big leaguer forever at this point. Rogers and McMahon are gonna be split in time. Hampson has the glove to play anywhere. He's played some in the outfield so far, but you know, I think Tapia coming out this year and having his big coming out party screws him a little bit, because if Tapia had struggled, they would have had to send him down, and that means a DFA because he's out of options. They brought up Hampson to be the outfielder. That's fine for him, but Tapia has been a spark plug for this team, and Hampson's kind of got nowhere to go right now. So, barring an injury, he's going to be in AAA for the foreseeable future, I think.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. There's one other one.
How about from a Hosmic Error at Team Mockman? Is Wolters playing over his head, or did he really get good at hitting?
You know, I think it's
a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Of both. Yeah. it's, you know, obviously I don't think Tony Wolters is a 300 hitter for the entirety of this season. But he is doing things better this year, in a lot of different ways. Now he's certainly being helped out by some stuff, like he's got a 337 BABIP. But last year he was insanely bad with his batting average on balls in play. It was 189. So he's getting a little bit of help. We're being somewhat lucky last year in a category where he was horrendously unlucky. I think he has improved. I don't think he's this good. I think by the end of the season,
He's close to where he was.
At best, I think he's a 250.
In his first year with the Rockies in 2016, he's putting up very similar numbers to that. The batting average is helped by the high BABIP, but his OPS plus, which is kind of takes all that out to a 16. This year it's 87. Those are similar seasons. So when he came up that year, he had 259 with a 723 OPS in 2016. This year, 297 with 760. That's kind of the Tony Wolters we're seeing this year. The last 2 years, he was pretty bad. This year, we're getting 2016 Tony Wolters again. He's already worth at least one win above replacement, which is what he was all of 2016. That's pretty much Tony Wolters. If you make Tony Wolters a two and a half win catcher, like just from his defense, from his offense, like that is all you want.
Be fine with that. All right, let's make this the last one because I think it'd be a fun one to yell about some past dudes. At Chris J. Finley, our Isle of Man bureau chief, quote, taking the contract into account, have the Rockies actually had anyone worse than Ian Desmond? This is from a few days ago, back before we really all started talking about how Ian Desmond was playing a lot better. The Desmond contract is obviously not great, but the Rockies have had some bad in the past. But it led me, this kind of just brought me to the discussion that I wanted to have, which is Mike Hampton was only a Rocky for 2 seasons. And that, to me, for some reason,
it seems like he was there for 100 years.
They signed Mike Hampton to a, what was it, 10-year, $131 million contract. Oh, like Mike Hampton's deal was...
for 120.
It was impossibly outlandish. And he, by the way, just received his final check from the Rockies in 2018. He had not played with them for 16 years, but the team had a deal worked out with him that contained $19 million in deferred payments, and in December, he was paid the last one of those. It was 8 years, $121 million, as you said. He was only a Rocky for 2 years, and that is, like, crazy to me to think for some reason. Mike Hampton really in total in his time in Colorado. 62 starts and a 21-28 record, a 5.75 ERA. The most baffling thing about it is Mike Hampton was an all-star his first year in Colorado. No one remembers that. He was an all-star.
He was
super won a silver slugger.
Good. Yeah.
So good. He was the first half of
that
season.
Half? Yeah.
9-5, 4.02 ERA. For Mike Hampton. And that was pre-Humidor Coors or first year of the Humidor Coors. Like, that was insane at that point. And he was, you know, that looked like, I think he started that season, like 8-1?
Yeah, I mean,
8-2. 9-2, actually.
Complete game on opening day against the Cardinals, I remember.
I was at that game. 8-3. 5 hits, no runs, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks. He started that season 9-2 and was like getting deep into games, like seven innings, 7 2/3, 8 innings, 9 innings in a complete game shutout win over the Mets on May 9th of that year. Like, Mike Hampton looked like this is what turns the tide for the Rockies as a franchise. And then the second half of that season happened. And one more season of Mike Hampton in purple pinstripes, and we never saw him again. But this is the second most baffling thing about Mike Hampton. Did you realize Mike Hampton was still pitching in the major leagues as of 2010? Mike Hampton made 10 relief appearances with the D-backs in 2010. I don't remember that.
Did we get angry
that
about
was our
it?
Season
yeah,
working together. Like, yeah, like we probably were screaming about that somewhere. I don't remember that at
not even
all.
A little bit.
Now, granted, he made 10 relief appearances that totaled all of 4 1/3 innings. But even the year before that, he made 21 starts for the Astros. He pitched 112 innings in 2009. I feel like
I would have been more angry about that.
No. He was out of baseball. He was hurt 2006 and 2007. Came back and made 13 starts with the Braves in 2008. Then 21 starts with the Astros in 2009. 10 relief appearances in 2010 with the D-backs when he was 37 years old. And then left baseball, cashed checks from the Rockies for the next 8 years, apparently. And now is probably just like sitting on an island.
There's a lot of stories about Mike Hampton in Denver that are not glowing stories.
Not super.
About like, him at some of those Avalanche games, I remember, that were, like when the Avs were winning the cup that year, like drunkenly confronting beat writers about things they said about him and like using some very colorful language.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, I think that was in Dater's book, actually, about the Wings and Avs rivalry, if I remember correctly, before he got all weird, too, you know.
I was going to say, I'm going to redact the comments that I was going to make. Mike Hampton also, by the way, which I completely forgot this as well, he was working as the Mariners bullpen coach up until a couple of years ago, and then just like really abruptly resigned. And that seemed like a weird story that I'm not sure was ever told, but in July of 2017, he just resigned as bullpen coach. Mike Hampton, he's a kind of a tortured dude.
He's got some things.
If I was cashing checks like Bobby Bonilla for God knows how long, 17, 16 years after I stopped playing.
But also, you know, he's from Florida. So, you know, you got to give him a little bit of leeway there.
True.
You know?
He is a literal Florida man. Bobby Bonilla, by the way, will continue getting checks until when? When is
2036 or something like that? No, like we talked about this last week. Like when Max Scherzer's contract has him getting $15 million every July 1st, 6 years after his contract is done with the Nationals.
How many years?
6 years. Until 2028, I believe. Amazing. That is a lot of furtive money. Like, Scherzer's making like $15 million this year, which is like obviously a lot of money. But like for what he is, that's not a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that's what deferred payments mean.
That is incredible. There are a lot of contenders in the running for worst contract in franchise history. Touch on Denny Nagel's contract.
Yeah, that was like 5 for 55 or whatever. Yeah, no, Mike Edwards wins it hands down, no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know. Denny Nagel was arrested for soliciting a prostitute on Colfax after being given like $55 million.
Yeah, but like,
it's a pretty
part
bad
of Colfax. You know, like, are we talking like in front of the Lions Lair?
I think it was like bad East Colfax and like bad like early 2000s East Colfax, like before anything was worth driving.
Before the Twist and Shout was there,
it was a Queen of Sheba Ethiopian restaurant and nothing else.
It was on Colfax before when it was still the Lowenstein Theater and like before they put in the tattered cover there. Yeah.
Like Stapleton had not yet been redeveloped from just empty airport runways.
Right.
It's like a little terrifying. Don't worry, in the long illustrious history of this franchise, there are a lot of those. There's a lot of running contenders for the worst free agent deal in franchise history. Exciting.
Yeah. Hey, but the Rockies are playing well.
Rockies are playing well. And Major League Baseball first-year player draft is coming up next week. As we've talked about over the last couple of seasons on the podcast, it feels really good to not have to talk about the draft or minor leaguers all that often because the Rockies are playing well.
We've definitely neglected them a lot. Yeah.
2014 through 2016, you know, we were talking about prospects and the draft and all that stuff quite a bit, and it's been kind of cool to not have to talk about that over the last couple of seasons. But we will discuss the Rockies selections next week, and you know, probably not in a ton of depth, but we'll pick out like who's got the best name and you know, who you might want to have a beer with. All of our hard hitting analysis, as you've come to expect from the six seasons.
Basically, how you want to pick a president and vote for a president. That's what
right, exactly, same thing. So you know, I guess I'll do it. I'm hoping to go down there and see Thick Vlad tonight.
Ooh, he's pretty thick, but with like three C's.
Not even low key.
He's like Franmil Reyes.
Big old La Mole, La Mole, La Mole. Did you see that video of Mark Grant going through the Jack in the Box drive-thru?
we had it on Whip the other day.
He's so great. And that poor employee was so annoyed with him. What are you gonna get for your drink? Oh man, I wish we had the Padres broadcast. So anyway, you can get in your questions to @PurpleDinoCast on Twitter. PurpleDinosaurPodcast@gmail.com is the email address that we have not checked in like a year. And that'll do it for this week's episode of the old EP. We'll talk to you next week. Love you.
Bye.